services, community opportunities, businesses, and economic development, and much more. Hear from our leaders and special guests. Call in to be a part of this history-making broadcast. Join LCCC's movement to create vibrant neighborhood conditions for children, for adults, and businesses to thrive socially, academically, artistically, and economically. This is the next episode of Russell on the Move with your host, Kevin Fields. Leading with vision, educating on economic mobility, advancing equity, developing quality.
Good morning, everybody. This is Kevin Fields, and welcome back to another episode of Russell on the Move. Glad to be here in the studio and thankful for today, the third Thursday in the month of November, a month to be thankful, a month to be grateful, the month of Thanksgiving. And we're here to give thanks today and to celebrate a continuation of this show and to talk about a few things. My co-pilot is in the saddle here with me, Herbert Johnson. Good morning, Herbert.
Good morning, Kevin. How you doing?
I'm hanging in there.
Good.
We're going to have another great show today. Just to reflect briefly on last week, we had a great show last week, a show where the theme was celebrating the brotherhood and celebrating the legacy of Daryl Drake, who was inducted into the Western Kentucky University Athletic Hall of Fame last Saturday. And I would say it was a huge success. The show itself was a great success. We've been getting great feedback. The blog post and the podcast are on our website in case you missed it. It's on LCCCnews.org, getting great feedback on that. But also, Herb, we went down to Bowling Green this past weekend, our wives and our friends, and we all hung out. I thought we had a great day. Certainly was a great day of celebration.
It was definitely a great day. Had an opportunity to celebrate Daryl Drake. It's a historical moment for the university and the city of Louisville and his family. So it was good to be a part of that. And, you know, we personally had a great time. Sharon and I had a great time at down at WKU Old Stomping Ground.
Yes, sir. Hung out on the yard. Went over to watch the football game. Spent some time in Dill Arena as a part of the induction celebration. It was great being with Daryl's family, his wife Sheila, his brother Derek, all of his daughters and grandchildren were there. Just a great day of fellowship and family coming together, and just honoring, you know, a great group, because Daryl was amongst a great group of inductees. Courtney Lee, NBA basketball player, was there. And just a great group of inductees this year. Today we're going to continue our broadcast. Last month, I think the date was the 21st of October, we produced the 7th annual West Louisville Economic Mobility Summit, where our theme was Empty Pantry, the State of Food Insecurity in West Louisville. And we had a great day of exercises with opening and keynote panel discussions, breakouts, all focused on dealing with an economic problem in our community. It faces everybody on the planet, in fact, but Louisville is no different. Food insecurity. And so we want to kind of review some of that experience that we had. We've invited Zyberia Perrier, who heads up our adult economic mobility work at LCCC. She may be with us or may be calling in. We have anybody on the line, Brother Vince? Yeah, and I know we've got Gil Finley, who is the State Director for Economic Development for Kentucky State University, who's heading up many initiatives across the state. One's very important here in Louisville, and especially in West Louisville, is the West Louisville Cooperative Extension Office. I almost forgot the name, Gil, but welcome to Russell on the Move. Gil Finley is on the line with us. Good morning, Gil.
Good morning, Brother Fields. How are
we? Doing great, doing great. Just excited that you're able to spend some time with us. We wanted to just really do a nice recap discussion on the Economic Summit, and we wanted to feature you this morning as we do this recap, Gil, because your leadership has really been instrumental in our community in getting us focused on this issue of food insecurity. And so when we organized our summit, it was with the idea of creating a great platform for the work of you and Kentucky State University and the work that you're doing here in West Louisville with the Cooperative Extension Office. So what we'd like to do in this segment here is have you just first start with giving another introduction of yourself, because this is not the first time you've been on Russell on the Move, but we want you to just give another brief introduction of yourself, and then I want you to be able to help us to unpack, you know, the opportunities and challenges and some of the policy threats that we're facing and some of the growth opportunities that we're looking at with this issue of food insecurity. But we'll start with an introduction, Brother Gil.
Sure, we'll do our best. Thank you for the invitation. I'm Gil Finley. I'm the program leader for community resource development with Kentucky State. I have left Louisville as a native, a young man that lived in the west end of Louisville off of Market. I think it was 37th and Market at the time. Then we lived out towards the Poplarville, Newburgh area. When I left there, came to Kentucky State, got a couple of degrees, and still in the city of Frankfort, where Kentucky State is, and have the opportunity to give back to my alma mater. But an awesome opportunity to come back and bring agriculture resources to West Louisville to help bring all types of resources and educational programming dealing with food and dealing with all types of expertise. So we have all kinds of areas that we cover, such as heirs' properties. That most people don't know that, Brother Fields, that that's the loss of land. So we are dealing with a big initiative that goes and affects the majority of our states, especially southern states, where African-American farmers, providers of food, have lost over the last 5 years over 450 million acres of farmland due to heirs' property. Kentucky is a state that doesn't have legislation put in place to handle forced sales from unclean deeds. So people who get an inheritance from their family, it's a family farm, they might be relatives that spread out multiple states, but if that actual deed doesn't have the clarity, it becomes a forced sale, and it's either going to cost you to get it through trying to maintain, or you're going to lose property. Well, imagine that, 450 million acres. You can Google it and find it, but that's something we're dealing with, because you're talking about food producers who are of color. Not only there in rural areas now, it's a big deal too. Your smaller areas, your eastern Kentucky's, various areas, all throughout the South, we're losing properties. But that's one of several things we deal with: leadership, we deal with soft skills, we deal with disaster preparedness, multiplicity of just different things that I oversee with people and staff. But we were able to open an office with you in West Louisville in the LCCC building. I have a physical office there. The West Louisville Cooperative Office has expertise. We have advocacy for food justice and local food systems to nutrition educators. And we have several other positions that are going to be filled. And some of those positions are going to be on Kentucky State's website for state specialists that actually deal with different types of, such as community resource development, such as entrepreneurship, just to name a few. But we're making strides. We're coming back to Louisville. And our mission at Kentucky State is to serve the unlimited resource minority farmer and those who are in need of support, technical support, educational support, as well as resources to be able to advance and make a difference in the communities they live. So that's kind of What we do in a nutshell, we're very blessed to be able to come back to contribute to such a great city. You know, I'm a native and I live there, and I hold my L's up. My heart is all about the L's, and I love Louisville. And so I wanted to come back and be able to give in a time where we have grave need, immense need, to handle and address a lot of the things that are affecting marginalized communities, those who are live in geographical areas that they face many, many things that really affects the whole state of Louisville as well as the state. So in a nutshell, that's kind of some of the things we're doing right now.
Excellent, excellent. So, you know, I'm going to touch on a few of the key points that you just brought up. But before we do that, talk a little bit about your professional career track, you know, your credentials and so forth. How are you engaged professionally in this work?
Well, I have a master's. I have a bachelor's in criminal justice. I have a master's in public administration and public affairs. But I've been working in the education arena probably over about 29 years now, in various tiers of education. And I've worked with the trade industry, where all your occupational trades. I was in Louisville. I made over 1,200 female welders, dealing with all the occupations that deal with carpentry, and iron workers, operator, engineer, heavy equipment, to electricians. I've had that for a while, and I was able to do some significant things there to help. But then coming back again, working with the university through the Department of Agriculture. Most people do not realize that Kentucky State, even though it has its difficulties, but it is a premier university. It is ranked and has been ranked probably in the last 20 years in the world, not just within domestic states with our agriculture. We are ranked right now, I think we're in the top 5 in the United States. So you take that above your predominant institutions, your large, huge institutions, that, and Kentucky State, as small as she is, still travails and actually has shined. And we are ranked in the world probably in the top 10. We've been that way for years for our agriculture, and that's raising fish and different things. And so I have a plethora of resources that I'm able to tap into, and to not only that, to work with other parts of the state. I deal with disaster initiatives that is really big that we're probably going to tie in, because disasters kind of commingle with what happens to the scarcity, the insecurities of food and food access that we'll talk about. But with that, I'm right now working with the Appalachian Mountain area, where there was 3,000 Appalachians that did not get attention when the floods just happened just a year ago. And dealing with them and bringing grant monies and resources to them to be able to help them overcome the tragedy of loss and the survivors there, and dealing with their mental stability a lot, the post-traumas that come from disasters. So we've been invested. We have a great opportunity, and so I get to work in extension. So you have two sides of the university. You have research and data, and that comes from your researchers. They are doing that. They gather the experiment. They gather data and research. They give that to us. And you have the extension side, who is to create educational programs with data, proven data, to be able to implement programming and bring resources according to the need and the survey assessments that help to our particular areas within the whole Commonwealth. So I get to do a little bit of move around the state, but we have specific focuses right now because Louisville is such an urban city that drives the influence for the whole state. And so with that, we have extensive. So I work with educators all across the United States from all various schools, from Cornell to 19 land-grant universities, majority of them are HBCUs as well, but also with your predominantly white institutions that are extension entities who work together to resolve issues in various places throughout the United States.
You know, that's awesome. I think it's very noteworthy, the point you made about, you know, Kentucky State University being a premier institution nationally, if not globally, in the space of agriculture. And so we, you know, we recognize certainly KSU as a HBCU, a historically black university and college, but it's also a premier institute advancing agriculture. So I wondered if you might just highlight for our listening audience the maybe top three or four agricultural programs and then make the case for how those programs would be connected to our city in helping to advance agriculture here in West Louisville.
Yeah, you have your aquaculture, which is the raising. If you go out to our website, we raise a lot of things there. Aquaculture, you have hydroponics and you have aquaponics. They different things. Some of your growing vertical, you're growing vegetables and fruits, vegetation by water systems without dirt and soil. They can produce rapidly, a few more times than you can within soil. And in most of those situations, we'll probably come back to that. Those are kind of more controlled environment growing, to be able to produce and have food and food access. Then you have the, aquaponics, which is dealing with, your fish. And so we raise shrimps and spawns and we've had spoonbills, we do all types of breeds. We right now bats, and that's becoming a white table delicacy now. Farmers who lost were in agriculture with tobacco. A lot of them are becoming shrimp farmers now, and they're becoming. We have techniques where you can actually raise shrimps out of a swimming pool. A lot of these folks don't know these practical, inexpensive means to be able to create food, but also to raise. Bass and catfish and many, many different types of rock. Tilapia is one of the big things, and a lot of people like tilapia. We raise those things and teach farmers throughout the Kentucky how to raise those things. And then getting into your extension side, those are your your programmatic educational program. We have family consumer science. We have 4-H. We have community resource development. We have natural ANR, which is agriculture and natural resources. And all those are different areas of expertise with many different people who work throughout the state to bring programming and to bring technical assistance and those things. And then in addition to that, you have our colleges with all our college with the different types of things. We have a fermentation distillery certificate program that allows you to get in the industry of both the bourbon side or the food side with fermentation. Short turnaround certificate, very notable, actually opens the door for you to get a great job with it. Many things to drone technology, to ag technology. So we have a plethora of things that come through the College of Ag that's not. And you're non-traditional. Most people just think of dirt and soil with ag. And with that, because of the history, it stigmatizes, and our younger generations don't want to get into it because it represents slavery and the past hardships that our forefathers and mothers had. But when you're talking about the new technologies, you're talking about drone technology, you're talking about unmanned tractors, and you're talking about technology, legal policies, the things that we don't think about, that don't deal with the hard work of putting your hands in. So the field is wide open. It's more STEM related because you're talking about a lot of engineering of food systems, food raising products, all these types of things. So it encompasses things. Just think of this way, Brother Fields, and we're in here. Agriculture is everything. The air you breathe, the water you drink, the clothes you have on, the lotions you put on your body, the food you put in your body, the shoes you put on, the cars you drive. I mean, we're working with now new synthetic things that deals with seaweed that now is taken over from polyester. So it encompasses a huge range of life at large.
Wow, you unpacked a lot with that. And, Herbert, I was... As we were listening, I got Herbert Johnson here, and Jabir Perrier has joined us as well. But Herbert, you've been in the food and beverage industry for a long time, right? And so yep. when you hear talk about agriculture, you know, we're talking about food, right? We're talking about the production of food. And there's so much that Gil just unpacked in terms of the kinds of academic curriculums and various resources that KSU brings. And to think that they have an extension office where the folks in West Louisville can get connected to those many services is pretty big. But one thing that stuck out to me, I could talk about a few of them, but the one, he talked about a short-term distillery certificate where you can learn the art of or the sciences of distillation, right?
Right.
And knowing how big that is in this market, you know, with the fact that we've got the Brown Foremans and Heaven Hills and all those other brands that come under those two companies. We just featured the Bro Brothers, for example, at our economic summit. I just see, you know, the connection between these various training initiatives that KSU can bring and entrepreneurship. I'm trying to make the connection between, you know, what those services are and how people can get connected to those educational opportunities and build business, right?
Right, right. Exactly, Kevin. I mean, it gives you an opportunity to have what you need to get in the door. The education, the experience, the training, everything that Gil's talking about leads up to entrepreneurship, food, taking care of your family, feeding your family. So it's very important that everybody's listening to what Gil had to say today, because once you unpack it, it's just another opportunity. It's a trade. It's a experience. It's a college education. All those things, are good for, the community and each individual family.
Yeah, and so, I went out. You suggested going out online and looking at your website, and I did that, Gil, and your website is pretty rich with information itself. KYSU.edu, if anybody wants to go out there and check out that website. But I noticed a few things, and I wanted to segue into the conversation about the panel discussion that you moderated, and you had people like Letitia Marshall and I noticed Von Barnes. I didn't know until I just saw this on your website that he's actually a part of the staff at KSU.
Yes.
So I want you to just maybe highlight from your moderator perspective the key points that were engaged in that discussion. And I know we're still, the Cooperative Extension Office is still relatively new. You opened the doors back in April of this year. So you're still collecting data. You're still, doing your assessments as you plan, your strategic approach to how you're going to unpack your programs. But talk about kind of the key points that were elaborated on with respect to the landscape, the current landscape of accessing food in Louisville and the role that various groups like government, nonprofits, what did you learn and what could you share with our listening audience?
One thing I've learned is, and I've experienced as I travel around, it's a very universal situation in most urban settings. We have the same systems, policies that are in place that most people don't like to deal with the redlining situation that actually are legitimate legal systems that allow or restrict certain accesses to food. And so when you're talking about major issues, you're talking about food access, food availability, you're talking about things that deal or are stigmatized or centered around economic structures or geographical location of communities to keep them within structures that that will not allow them to have the accesses as other areas of people, groups of people. So the first thing we have to deal with the complexities that deal with food deserts. Now, we hear that word. It's a very, very popular word. But when I tell you it's the same in New Jersey as it is in Atlanta, as it is in D.C., all your urban areas where majority of the people who are affected are black and brown due to the structures, the infrastructure set in place. But when you talk about food deserts, you're talking about these infrastructures that only allow residents within those boundaries to have access to healthy food options. or, you know, nutrition that actually causes us to stay healthy and fight off infection, fight off chronic diseases or inherited diseases that come. But it's a multidimensional thing that we face with poverty areas daily. You know, and that's why a majority of those areas don't have major access to retailers that I'll talk about, hopefully. You know, they don't have access to fresh foods and good foods, you know. So the majority of them are living in an area where they have access to food and snacks and things. When you're hungry, you're going to go get it, whether it's potato chips or pop or whatever, or fried food. You know, you're talking about majority of those cities, and especially local gas stations, convenience stores, and those things, you know. And these things continue to help us be able to come to a place of malnutrition or obesity. And then we don't lack. We lack the educational transfer to have nutritious food or how to cook. Everything's a quick going on the hairy to get stuff, but that's because our generations, our family structures are different now. You know, two means that I found out, even in our discussion, but also that we talked about there, Brother Fields, but even in general, something came up. There's two big methods to be able to control marginalized communities. And one of those things is to be able to control the workforce. And secondly, it is to be able to control food. And when we talk about food deserts, that just means you have the lack of access to it because of transportation, and it's not that far. I think now it's two stores in West Louisville serving well over 60,000 people. One storm comes in, and people got to go to the store. They can't get there, and the foods are going to be off the shelf. You don't have this, let's say it's the winter, and you don't have access to markets, so you don't have access to farmers. What's going to happen? Your elderly can't get there because another way of a food desert is the transportation issue. So we have gone beyond food desert issues to Louisville now to a food apartheid. That's where you take your big stores, your major retailers, your big box grocery stores, and you eliminate them. By whatever reason, and what happens is it creates a very serious issue in Louisville. I would like to bring to the table, as we've talked from that summit, you know, I was looking back and going back and just pondering over some things, and I realized that as of June of 23, this past year, just this year, your fatality rate rose in West Louisville. You had, this time in June of last year, you had over 203 people that had fatally gotten shot and killed. But this year, 219, so it was an increase. Now, why did I bring that up? Because one of the greatest things that happens when you have food insecurities and you have lack of food, the crime rates go up in the geographical location. Wow. It is proven and has been reported. Matter of fact, I think your Channel 11 on WHAS put a report out to talk about this. But what happens is, when you take away the food from people, it creates violent crimes. And when you actually bring food, it resolves it. Right. And I'll leave you with this to go to the next question. It makes sense because wars in the world are fought at the table. It's between wars that ended and started at the table over food. Because food, when you don't have it, drives the person to do irrational things because people say, we got to eat.
You know, I heard you say that quote at the summit, that wars are created over food. And, you know, we're compiling a report, and I can see that Siberia is being one of those salient points that come out of this conversation. Because, Gil, I would say this, and Siberia, you can echo this as well, because we're still learning a lot from this whole experience of planning this event. We talked to dozens of experts in this field, and we were figuring out, you know, what we could learn and what we could do programmatically at our organization to help advance it. And big part of that is to stay in close partnership and collaboration with Kentucky State University and its Cooperative Extension Office. But we're learning a lot, you know, here. And I wanted to, we're almost on a point of a break. But before we take a break, I wanted to start the conversation with you, Zabiri, about that whole idea of what did we learn? You know, what were the key things that we learned? One, from a planning standpoint, you know, and organizing this type of an event, bringing together experts on this subject, but also in terms of what did we learn? And we don't have to cover all this. We can cover some of it after the break. But the second part of that is what did we learn about, you know, what we need to do from an action standpoint, what kinds of things that we need to take on. But as we were organizing this, this was kind of new to you, right? It was new to all of us at LCCC. And so what did you really learn from this whole planning process, Iberia?
Well, first I want to say good morning to everyone. I know I came in a little later and we had already got started. But one of the main things that I learned while we were participating in this Economic Mobility Summit, or hosting this Economic Mobility Summit this year surrounding food insecurity, that the number one thing that basically is lacking in our community and majority of a lot of communities is basically information. No one knew or no one knows where to go, where to seek, where to find information regarding food insecurity.